You're tuned to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Coming up next, from lockdown, Radio Free Aaron.
Welcome to Radio Free Aaron. It's getting very difficult to get people over there in Ireland. Everybody's on holidays, but the one people that are not on holidays are the Loyalist Death Squads. Gunfire has erupted today in parts of North Belfast, and there's been rioting going on all week, and yet there's no marches going on. Everybody would have you believe that the only time there's rioting or people being shot is that when there's orange marches going through. We'll be calling over to Belfast, the north part of Belfast, and speaking with Joe Lagan of Republican Sinn Féin, who is in the area, and he'll give us the latest update. Also, we have in studio Pauline Campbell. She's with the Gavahi Road Residents Association, and she'll be telling us what's going on in that area when there is no marching and when they don't have the big steel cages going up around the Gavahi Road area to protect them from the orange culture that wants to come by their doorsteps. And we have Nolik Stationery today, and he'll be telling us about the latest on the 1998 treaty that was signed back then, and he'll give us an update on that. I think we'll do a few announcements right now. Sandy.
Okay, our friend George Harrison, the most unrepentant Fenian of them all, has sent us a statement, a tribute to James Connolly. What I believe James Connolly would have devoted his life to had he survived the 1916 uprising against British imperialism. A workers' republic with the working people of Ireland in control of Ireland and all its resources. Reaching outside Ireland, the working people of all the planet in total control of all the wealth it contains. Be used the interests of all the people to improve their standard of life and not that of just a few profiteers. A workers' world with the workers, regardless of race, color, gender, or creed, in complete control. Nature furnishes its wealth to all people in common. God beneficently has created all things, that their enjoyment be common to all living beings, and that the earth become the common property of all. Only unjust usurpation has created the right of private property. St. Ambrose, signed George Harrison, a follower of Connolly, and only George would dredge up from somewhere a socialist saint.
Okay, coming up tomorrow, a day to celebrate Bernard White, Program Director in Exile from WBAI, Sunday, July 29th, 2 to 9 p.m. at Pier 63, that's 23rd Street and the Hudson River, featuring Odetta, Sam Archer, Heritage OP, D. DJ Andre D, and there'll be entertainment, prizes, dancing. So tomorrow, come out and celebrate Bernard White at the pier.
All right, it might be a great day outside, but it's not so great up here at WBAI, and it's hard for me to talk about the Bush administration banning Irish Republicans from this country, but they are allowed to be on WBAI, but fellow producers here are not. During the week, a great friend of Radio Free Erin and the Irish Republican community and myself, Robert Knight, was euphemistically called suspended from WBAI. Well, I called up the station during the week and I talked to Fred, and Fred told me that management had said that Robert Knight was suspended indefinitely. And then I talked to Robert Knight, and he said indefinitely could mean the same thing that went on with Grandpa Al Lewis, who is still suspended indefinitely from here at WBAI. And it seems to be what's going on here at the station. And we can call it radio profiling here at Route 120 Wall Street. You would think the next thing they're going to charge Robert Knight with is TWB, Talking While Black. And I just want to say that Robert's been a personal friend of mine. I first met Robert back in 1979, 1980, when I was wrapped in a blanket out in front of the British consulate protesting the blanket protest in a mock cell, highlighting, and this was before the hunger strike. And when Robert came around, he was very unusual as a journalist, as he knew what was going on. He didn't have to be explained what was going on in Ireland. As an African-American, he identified right away what was happening. And with his reports out of BAI, he was the news director. We'd all rush back, Bernie, if you remember, back to Clancy's to hear the reports coming in at 6:30 from Robert's reporting about the blanket protest. And then he also got to meet Kieran Nugent. I think you were responsible introducing Kieran Nugent. Kieran Nugent was the first blanket man back in 1976 when he went into a cell. He refused to wear a prison uniform. He said, "You'll have to nail that to my back." It's unfortunate that Kieran has died since, all the worse of the wear from drinking in the later years of his life. But Robert was there.
And 13 gunshot wounds.
Right. And Robert was there the day that Kieran Nugent was arrested downtown and had exclusive interviews from WBAI. And what we have to realize here at the station, when you ban someone like Grandpa Al Lewis, you're also banning the guests that they would have on. Because since Grandpa Al Lewis has been banned, you do not hear the voices of Omar Wally Clay. You do not hear the voices of Father Lawrence Lucas. And now with Robert Knight being banned, and I don't want to use the term suspended indefinitely. I mean, we use all these euphemisms. Robert Knight is not on these airs. And when Robert Knight's not on, what he was going to have on his show were the people from Tula, Texas, where half the adult male population have been arrested in drug sweeps. Those voices are not now being heard here at WBAI. Robert Knight, who when he was in Panama, was back almost 2 weeks, and we had the invasion of Panama. I don't want to draw a correlation between Robert and Panama and our government going down there, but when Manuel Noriega was in trouble, who did he call? He called up here to WBAI to talk to Robert Knight because he could trust him as a journalist to get out whether you agree with Manuel Noriega as an ex-CIA agent or you didn't. He knew that he could get his voice heard here. Robert Knight has won the Polk Award for Contragate. I mean, we could go on and do a whole show just on what's going on here at WBAI. I mean, Robert Knight, when he did the morning news, he didn't do rip and read, and then after reading a statement from the AP, have to say, "Well, that terrorism, that was in the AP wire. I don't really identify with that." Robert would rip and rewrite, and with his humor, and the way he could turn a phrase, and it must be because he's a country boy from North Carolina. I mean, Robert could turn a phrase. He could stick the knife into you, and you wouldn't even know it. I mean, that's how good Robert was. And his sense of humor, you would tune in the morning, you'd have to listen to every word. I mean, during the Reagan years, that's when he was really shining. I mean, when he's talking about the West Coast White House and everything like that. But I can almost guarantee one thing. When this conflict is finally ended here at WBAI, Robert Knight will be back in these studios with his sense of humor, with his cutting-edge reporting about what's going on in Tula, Texas. And that is one thing. Robert Knight will not be kept off the airwaves for very long.
I just wanted to...
Yeah, just as John was saying, Robert was a man who knew his topic before he got into it. I spoke many times with him about the North. He was as well-versed as anybody who was working with us on the thing. We introduced him to many, many Republicans who came over here on visits, surveys, etc. Robert always had time to speak to these people, and these people really enjoyed speaking to him since the man knew what he was talking about and knew how to present it. In fact, Robert would go as far as to find out what was the music you played. You know, that was one of his big things, too. You know, what was that song you played? And the whole thing.
But, Bernie, it was just like other reporters would come up and they would ask you, oh, it's about Catholics and Protestants. Oh, Ireland's about... And these would be maybe Irish-American reporters, whereas you cut to the chase with Robert. Robert knew exactly what was going on, and he got right to the meat of the story.
Yeah, but I mean, at the time of the hunger strike, I did not know Robert. I had never met him, and I have great respect for him, and I've met him a few times. Like, I wouldn't claim him as a personal friend. But when I was thinking back, I remembered, and we were coming up to the anniversary of the death of two hunger strikers, Kevin Lynch and Kieran Dougherty, who were among the last to die. What I remember as the hunger strike dragged painfully on to 10 men dying, that the main so-called mainstream media, the commercial media, lost interest. It wasn't news anymore that people were dying. And it wasn't news anymore that people were on the steps of St. Patrick's Cathedral or at the British Consulate. But Robert, as a news director, and he was the news director throughout the hunger strike, saw that BAI reported each one fully, competently. There was a reporter at every demonstration. And I remember, as I said, I did not know the man, calling up late at night, early in the morning, just before the news was to go on, saying there's a demonstration, there's a picket, something's happening. People don't die at convenient times for news. Robert was always there. Robert always covered the story. And I do appreciate the chance, perhaps belatedly, to say how appreciative we all were at the time.
Yeah, we never did get to say that. You know, as the time goes on, you just take Robert for granted. But now that his voice has been suspended from the airwaves here, we just hope he can come back. And you'll get to meet him at Pier 23 or 63.
Pier 63.
Tomorrow, I'm sure Robert will be down there. And we want to dedicate this. This is a CD we have here called Revolutionary Speeches. And Sandy, maybe you can set this up. This is called The Rebel. And listen to the words and just put Robert Knight in, substitute it for Rebel.
This is a poem written by Patrick Pierce, who was the leader of the 1916 uprising, together with James Connolly, who George Harrison was just referring to in his statement. And, of course, Patrick Pierce, after devoting his life to the struggle for Irish freedom and Irish culture, was, of course, executed by the British. And this is, in many ways, a statement of his life and his commitment.
The Rebel. I am come of the seed of the people that sorrow, that have no treasure but hope, no riches laid up but a memory of an ancient glory. My mother bore me in bondage my mother was born. I am of the blood of serfs, the children with whom I have played, the men and women with whom I have eaten, have had masters over them, have been under the lash of masters, and though gentle have served churls. The hands that have touched mine, the dear hands whose touch is familiar to me, have worn shameful manacles, have been bitten at the wrist by manacles, have grown hard with the manacles and the taskwork of strangers. I am flesh of these lowly. I am born of their bone. I that have never submitted. I that have a soul greater than the souls of my people's masters. I that have vision and prophecy and the gift of fiery speech. I that have spoken with God on the top of his holy hill. And because I am of the people, I understand the people. I am sorrowful with their sorrow. I am hungry with their desire. My heart has been heavy with the grief of mothers. My eyes have been wet with the tears of children. I have yearned with old, wistful men and laughed or cursed with young men. Their shame is my shame, and I have reddened for it. Reddened for that they have served, they who should be free. Reddened for that they have gone in want while others have been full. Reddened for that they have walked in fear of lawyers and of their jailers with their writs of summons and their handcuffs. Men mean and cruel. Oh, I could have borne stripes on my body rather than this shame of my people. And now I speak, being full of vision. I speak to my people, and I speak in my people's name to the masters of my people. I say to my people that they are holy, that they are august despite their chains, that they are greater than those that hold them, and stronger and purer, that they have but need of courage and to call on the name of their God. God the unforgetting, the dear God who loves the peoples for whom he died naked, suffering shame. And I say to my people's masters, beware. Beware of the thing that is coming. Beware of the risen people who shall take what ye would not give. Did ye think to conquer the people? Or that law is stronger than life and than men's desire to be free? We will try it out with you, ye that have harried and held, ye that have bullied and bribed, tyrants, hypocrites, liars. Renunciation.
And welcome back to Radio Free Aaron, and that was a dedication to Robert Knight, who is unceremoniously, not only did he have the indignity of being handed an envelope here on Wednesday night to tell him that he was not on the air, but they didn't even give him a phone call there where he could have saved $1.50 for the subway fare to come up to the radio station. And the $1.50 home, he could have stayed at home if they would have told him that he wasn't on that night. We're trying to get Nolik right now, but we'll go to our in-studio guest while Eliza tries to work a little bit of magic here with our technical system through the phones.
Here we have with us in the studio Pauline Campbell, the Gravahi Road Residents Association. Pauline, thanks for coming up on a beautiful Saturday afternoon.
You're welcome.
You know, we hear about Portadown and the Gravahi Road basically once a year, you know, when, as John said, the Orangemen try to inflict their wonderful culture on you. But I thought we might talk about the ordinary, so-called, life in the Gavahi Road. For instance, you know, if I want to go into the Times Square, which would be the center of town here, you know, have a drink, go to a department store, I mean, I might worry about the prices, but I don't worry about my safety. Would that be true for you?
No, in Portadown, when they were building the new shopping mall, which would be like slap bang in the middle of the town centre, they actually have an entrance at the Woodhouse Street entrance, which is like where the Catholics would go in, and they have an entrance on the main street where like the other denominations would go in. So that would give you some sort of idea the sort of circumstances that we live in. People would go to the High Street Mall, not sort of around July or whatever, because it's coming up to the marching season and because of the whole tension and thing in the town. Other than that, they would go because there's one of the stores which would be like a southern firm, so you know they would go and support that or whatever. They wouldn't really go to town as such unless you mean you have to go to get clothes. We don't have any clothes store. We have a new bank system, which is a 24-hour bank system, which means we don't have to go up the town to go to the bank anymore. People do have to go to town to access like the medical centres on the other end of town. If the kids want to go to the pool, the pool's on the other end of town. The town hall, naturally, is in the middle of the town. So, you know.
But talking about the swimming pool, I mean, would you the kids be safe going to and from the swimming pool?
Well, they would go like in large numbers, you know, and try and do it that way or whatever. I have a nephew now who would have went to, who would swim and would be very good at swimming, and he actually had went and done a like a cross community thing, and because he had went and done cross community, then the fellas that he had been aware with, like in Scotland, and it was nice. It's nice to go to Scotland, and it's nice to go to America, and it's nice to go to all these places and be all nice to each other. But then when you come home, it's not so nice. And because of him knowing these children and then being able to identify him or whatever, then he was attacked at the pool, so he never went back.
Pauline, the American and British media would have you believe you're living in these conditions because you will not let Orangemen with bowler hats walk 10 minutes down the Gavahi Road, that if that was allowed to happen, these wonderful malls would open up to you, there'd be no sectarian abuse, and you can go anywhere within that part of the United Kingdom, as they term it, but until you let the Orangemen come down there, you're going to have problems.
There was always these problems, before the Orange... I mean, Gavahi Road is not a new phenomenon. Gavahi Road has been going on, like, I'm 38. Gavahi Road hasn't just sprung up the last, like, 5 or 6 years, the way the British media would like it portrayed. That, like, these people, like, are troublemakers, and these people, like, have started this whole thing. Like, we're being blamed on the whole troubles in the north, because, like, we're not going to lie down and take it anymore. Because the terminology is, like, crappies lie down, and the crappies ain't lying down anymore. You know, and that's what's pissing them off.
You know, Pauline, that's the that leads to the next question that a lot of Americans say. My God, if things are so bad, why don't you just move and get out of there?
Why should we move? That's where we were born. I mean, we have as much right to be there as they have. And I mean, in answer to your thing about the British government and stuff, I mean, the British government actually offered us 15 million. At some stage, 15 million was floated at, like, a talks process. Like, my rights aren't for sale. Do you know, I have a right to live free from sectarian harassment under the Good Friday Agreement. I have a right to choose where I live. I have a right to go to work. I have a right to all these sort of things, and I'm not getting that on the ground. You know, so...
But, Pauline, you bring up such a great point here about a lot of people think they can buy their way out of conflict. And there is the most bizarre piece, an op-ed piece today, in today's New York Times, and it's by Richard Friedman. Now, you say, oh, Richard Friedman, he must be on the ground in the North. He knows what's going on. Richard Friedman is a professor of economics at Harvard, co-director of the Center for Economic Performance at London School of Economics, and the byline's out of London, because where else? If you're going to write about Ireland, you might as well write about it from London.
Yeah.
Now, here's his solution, and it is a novel solution, I have to admit. And he's sitting in these ivory towers, whether it's in London or up there in Cambridge at Harvard. And he said, the major deterrent making Northern Ireland's Good Friday peace agreement effective has been the unwillingness of the Irish Republican Army to decommission its weapon. Is there a way to make decommissioning more palatable to the IRA and more certain for the unionists who demand to relinquish the IRA's arms as part of the peace? There may be an economic solution. Pay for each weapon that the IRA and Protestant paramilitary groups turn over to authorities, giving the money not to the paramilitaries themselves, but to a special development fund to implement the peace agreement and to invest in the well-being of the people of Northern Ireland. Far from being a sign of defeat, this sort of decommissioning would be a way for the IRA and other armed groups to turn their weapons into resources that would benefit their communities. The money to buy the arms could come from three sources: the British government, which could finance the initiative in part from reduced spending in military forces in Northern Ireland, the Irish government, and the Irish abroad who want to see peace in the old country. As in any bargain where money is involved, the parties would have to bargain over the price of each decommissioned weapon. The Catholic and Protestant communities in Northern Ireland would have the same goal, to obtain a high price for the weapons, while the two governments and the overseas Irish communities would want to pay a lower price. Now, I'm not reading from the Onion magazine. This is today's New York Times. Now, we have to picture this. This is Monty Python. You got IRA guys in balaclavas walking in with M60s, surface-to-air missiles, and now we have, well, from my point of view, I'm Irish-American, so I got to be bargaining with the IRA guy. George Harrison sent it over. Now I got to bargain to get the friggin' weapon back from him.
Well, see, that's
cheaper price than what George paid for the weapon.
Yeah, but that's the other point, too. There'll be a certain segment from here in New York saying, we want the money since we sent it over.
Right, right.
Want the money back.
But this is how bizarre. This is what when academics get involved with political crisis. Could you imagine the Palestinians now stating to the Palestinians, listen, we have your solution. Come up to the bargain table, bring the weapons, and what we'll do is decide how much we're going to pay to buy the weapon back, and then we'll give you that money to put into your community. Nowhere in the article does it say, you know what, there is reduced military presence in the north of Ireland. You see that money we're saving? We're going to give it to the community, help them rebuild it. This lunatic from Harvard is stating, no, that surface-to-air missile, I know you bought that in Libya and it went for about, what, 10,000? What was the going rate, Bernie, for surface-to-air missile? Around 10,000. Well, I remember down in Florida when the guys were buying it, it was 10,000 a missile. So, I don't know I don't know if the price is appreciated now over time or has it decreased in value. But, I mean, these are the bizarre theories. No one has come up with a theory. How about we abolish the border, the British give an intent to withdraw, and then we negotiate what we're going to do with the weapons that are on this island. But as they brought up to you, they thought they could buy their way out of the Gabbahi Road conflict. Yeah. They offered you money and just said, listen, just let the Orangemen go by.
I mean, the money sort of come up in the conversation, and then somewhere along the line, like, someone sort of stuck this £15 million.
But Pauline, it just shows the money's there to help your community.
Yeah.
British government essentially is saying, listen, we have the money, but we need you to do this. If you don't do it, we're going to make you suffer. You're going to suffer sectarianism. You're not going to be able to go into Portadown, and you're not going to, you're going to live on the debt trap. I mean, that is some way of bargaining, isn't it?
Yeah, but see, that's part of the whole problem, that the British government, I mean, have denied the community stuff that they should have had for so long. And that is part of the problem. You know, they can't put their hands up and say, look, wash their hands of it and say it's nothing to do with us, because they are part of the problem.
Yeah, well, the problem that this gentleman from Harvard runs into, that most of the loyalists held weapons are legally held weapons.
Yeah.
So they would not have to, you know, bargain and sell these type of things. They're talking about these alleged weapons that the IRA has that came in from Libya and every other place, that they want them. Now, anybody who's been listening to this show for any length of time knows that most of this stuff probably doesn't exist, these IRA weapons and everything like this. And Maloney says they're only 50% of what they had, and the other stuff is in a bunker waiting.
That's
concrete.
That's 50% of all.
It's waiting concrete in bunkers. Whatever it is. It's really a good plan, John. We used it in Washington Heights here, and you know how Washington Heights is cleaned up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The precincts were just pulled over with everyone running down with the 9mm.
That was it. Sure.
There were traffic jams up and down Broadway. And
I want money for you. Date this, I'm going to shoot you, man.
Yeah.
So that's it. These plans, they look good on paper, especially the New York Times paper.
They also look good when you're in the pub, at the London, the LSE, please, not the London School, right? The LSE, the Faculty Lounge, right? That sounds very nice.
Okay, I'm going to read two stories. Yeah, go ahead.
Pauline, the other thing that surfaces periodically, usually from the Orange Order side, and what people may not realize over here, is that the Orange Order will not even sit down at the table with the residents and discuss this. And their line is, it's all the fault of this man, Brendan, this evil man, Brendan McKenna. He's been on this show a few times.
Uh-huh.
But if you just get rid of Brendan McKenna, everything would be fine, hunky-dory, and everything would work out wonderfully.
No, Brendan's just a red herring, because, I mean, they just don't want to even admit that Catholics even exist in Portadown, never mind sit down and talk with us. So Brendan is just a red herring. You know, that's a load of rubbish, because the thing about it is, they talk about, oh, we're not going to talk to him because he's like a terrorist and blah, 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 blah. You know, Brenton didn't kill anyone. Billy Wright killed loads of people, and they talked to Billy Wright, you know, so, like, they can't have a rule for one and a rule for another. That's a load of rubbish. I mean,
the good news is that they can't talk to Billy Wright anymore.
No.
You're listening to Radio Free Aaron, and it's 2 o'clock here. I'm going to read two stories. I'm going to play a song, and then we come back. We'll be heading over to Belfast to speak with Joe Lagan of Republican Sinn Féin to talk about some of the rioting that went on this week and some of the loyalist death squads that were shooting into the nationalist areas. Now, if you ever wonder where our baby Bush You've heard about Papa Bush. We got Baby Bush in the White House. How he ever got that little sickly wave that he does when he goes over to Air Force One. This was in this week's Irish Independent. And this is Bush talking about how he looks forward to meeting the Queen. How much he's looking forward, for example, to meeting the Queen again. He met her at a private lunch at the White House when his father was president, and quote, "She was great. A wonderful sense of humor. My mother and I, we liked the tea, and she fit right in. She was really neat." Mr. Hearn, the Prime Minister of Ireland, and better put, the President of Ireland, McAleese, on standby. And then there's George W.'s nostalgic memories of a dozen boyhood summers spent on a Scottish farm owned by one of Daddy's friends in the oil business, when he played the role of a little Scottish shepherd boy for American tourists. Quote, "Of course I kept my mouth shut and gave them my little Scottish boy wave." So that's where the president's wave came from. So we could see the connections already. I could see him on a mountainside in Scotland. He was probably a Ranger supporter wearing a Ranger jersey when he was doing this. And this is the latest out of West Belfast. We're talking about serious stuff coming out of there. A tourist initiative in West Belfast was launched yesterday to the unique sound of God Save the Queen in Irish. The eyebrow-raising singers were from an Irish theater group, Aisling Gear, who were performing at the Falls Road, the site of a new tourist office. Sinn Féin councillor Tom Hartley, who chairs the Belfast City Council Tourism Committee, speaking at the launch yesterday, said there was a lot of potential for tourism in West Belfast. "This is a time when there's so much negative publicity about Belfast. What we are doing here is making a statement of confidence," Mr. Hartley said. He added, "We're trying to extend our tourist season beyond 1 week in August."
And for anybody who don't remember or don't recall who Tom Hartley is, Tom Hartley is a man that was over here this year for the commemoration of the 1981 hunger strike. Now, Tom played such a very prominent part in the original hunger strike of 1981. I know from people over there that Tom never missed a meal. But Tom was the type of person that would come out to America, and he would discuss something like this, especially if they're going to sing God Save the Queen in Irish.
Well, we have a song here, and we dedicate this to the Queen. It's the Sex Pistols, God Save the Queen. We'll be right back. and welcome back to Radio Free Erin. Nothing like a little headbanging music here on Saturday in New York City. And now we head over to Belfast, where reports this morning where one nationalist was shot by loyalist death squads that they fired into nationalist areas. And all throughout the week, there's been rioting going on in Ardoyne and in the New Lodge. With us on the phone is Joe Lagan from Republican Sinn Féin. Joe, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm with Dave.
Joe, maybe you can give our audience an update, maybe starting from the middle of the week and work your way up to what happened today.
The middle of the week, the fighting had started down by Limestone Road there. It's out an area beside the New Lodge area. Small Catholic area, it's an interface. Newington was attacked by loyalist crowds. One house was hit with a pipe bomb thrown by loyalist bombers. The loyalists came into the nationalist area and wrecked the shop, wrecked a few of the nationalist houses. A young nationalist on the side of Limestone Road, the nationalist side, came out, and there was a lot of contact fighting. You see British Army put in the area and sealed the area off and effectively turned, as you usually do, on the nationalists. And the Red and the Earl of it, I was reckoned from about 3:30 on Wednesday to 5:00, 5:30 the following morning. It was very heavy. There was shots fired from the loyalist side, and a set of pipe bombs flew through a Capley window. Capley window just came under the interface at the Limestone Road. With the way the loyalists are doing it, they seem to be changing from, they're hitting different interfaced or outlined Catholic areas every so often, and then it would sort of retrace their steps and hit start all over again. It was the turn of Lands Avenue at Ardoyne Road. That was on Thursday night. It started about 9:30 on Thursday night when Catholic homes were attacked at the Ardoyne Road by crowds of loyalists. You had street fights. Again, it was hand-to-hand fighting. It turned into battles, bricks, stones, whatever anybody could get their hands on. It's developed into paddle bombs. The RUC as usual came in, and there was flashes with a nationalist at that end. That part of the Ardoyne Road had subsided for about an hour, and then loyalists there moved and attacked the other part of Ardoyne, which is known as Broughton Park. It's just across the road from the top of Shankill, known as the retail. The loyalists got a man who was on the influence of drink coming out of one of the local clubs. They got hold of him and they tried to, but he was badly beaten. They tried to take him down into the Weedville. Where if they had got him into the Weedville, he would have been dead. A crowd of nationalists who were on the streets, the sort of vigilante capacity, looking after the area, went to the scene when they heard the commotion, and they were able to, about 20 fellas went across into Weedville, and after a scuffle and a fight, they got the fella back. Then they were confronted with hundreds of loyalists who tried to come across the road and pick up nationalists again, attack the houses in Broughton Park. The nationalists, the crowd grew by this time. She had 400 or 500 people on a Sun Eater side, battling with each other. The RUC came. They button charged the nationalists into Broughton Park. I was on the road at the time when the button charge happened. They fired plastic bullets. They claim they fired 3 plastic bullets. While I was there, 4 people were hit. Later on, I found out one of them was a young girl. She was hit in her stomach. And the other 2 were youth, fellas. The girl was badly, she was kept in hospital. She was badly wounded. They proceeded then to batten people who were stalling at the side of the road. No bystanders watching. And just brutalized the nationalists at the top of Broughton Park. When the paramedics came to pick up the wounded, the RUC ordered them to bring them to the Mater Hospital, which is down the Crumlin Road, beside the Crumlin Road Jail, which is a loyalist area. It was there that they had their men there. They were taking the people's medical records and making arrests. The red that would be Wednesday night, Thursday morning, lasted till, I think it's about 7:00. yesterday. It flared up again when loyalists in five cars came in from the Reedville, went into the houses on the Crumlin Road. That's the houses just at the edge of the Crumlin Road, where it'd be facing the Catholic chapel behind that would be the loyalist district. They come down there, they proceeded to get out of their cars with spades, shovel, pickaxes, and beat down windows, and then threw paint bombs in, and generated 9 houses in armor wrecked. A man of 72 had to be rushed to hospital for treatment. This all happened in eye view of the Reedville, which is just about 100 yards up that from where this attack took place, which at the time had a couple of hundred Crown forces on it, or you see in British Army. The men in the cars were able to get away. The place was a soft touch. That was well planned, points to sort out UDA, UFF sort of operation, because they've done a few of them this last couple of weeks. At that time, the loyalists at the top of Twanio blocked the roads and held abuse at shoppers on the Catholic side here in the Iceland Center. There was a tense, it was a standoff. Was culminated in last night about 8:30, 8:15, when a woman or a child walking up the Ardoyne Road was set upon by youths, jumped out of a car. The car came from the loyalist Glenburn side. She was beaten. The crowds then in the houses on the Ardoyne Road, the people came in the houses to hurry in, and the game had on half fighting, which sort of grew until a major rat situation. The REC again poured in and again pushed the nationalists back and blocked the Ardoyne Road. Then what happened, there was a continuous from then till the houses on the Lands Avenue and the Ardoyne Road, the Catholic houses, were set on fire. Wrecked were stones and bottles coming through their windows. This was the ongoing thing all night. We had the fire brigade putting out fires continuously. They couldn't even leave the area at one stage, just had to stay there to make sure the fires were put out. We had a case where an elaborate trap was set for nationalists to set a house in the Lands Avenue on fire. Which, I mean, these houses are soft touches from, because the houses back off of the loyalist Glenburn estate. They set a house on fire, and when nationalists were around to put the fire out, that stage the fire brigade wasn't there. The loyalist gunmen opened fire from the Lands Road with 15 automatic shots. There was no hits at that stage, but there was an elaborate plan to get Catholics or whoever they could from our side into the trap. There was, as the night went on, the rant was spread. It was coordinated. They were hitting at different outlines of Ardoyne, and you had people having to run back and forward from different interfaces. And when one loyalist crowd dispersed and quieted down, it turned up somewhere else. And then that's when it went on all night. There was 2 feather gun attacks on the Ardoyne Road from the Glenburn area, and one from what's known as a complex, like a day centre. They used that as an advantage point and fired on the Ardoyne Road. And at that stage, there was one of the nationalists shot in the face. The rioting then went on for most of the night in the fighting. The houses, the Catholic houses, were still coming under a constant bombardment of whatever could be thrown. There was a pipe bomb thrown in their house the night before. Luckily, the house that was attacked on the night before was under renovation and was empty. It was completely wrecked with a bomb. The rioting went on until this morning about 5 o'clock in Crumlin Road when it subsided. And people were just fatigued and tired. We had members of Republican Sinn Féin who were actually wounded during the actual confrontations. Some were plastic bullets and beaten. Most of the people in Northern Ireland, I would think, have had about 4 hours sleep in 2 nights. The rant's been that intense, and the attacks have been that constant. Today, in the Glenburn, the loyalist area, there was 700 powder bombs found. Obviously, they're getting ready for another attack. So at the minute, the place is very, very tense. And there's groups of young ones hanging about. The British ground forces are heavy on the ground. There's hundreds of them in the place. They, last night at Twadio, they were used as cover for the loyalists. They attack the nationalists. So that's more or less the ongoing situation at the moment. It's, I don't know where it's going to flare up. In North Belfast, every nationalist area has been attacked in the past week.
And you're listening to Radio Free Erin, and we're getting a live report from West Belfast and all the trouble that's went on this week, despite no marching and despite the New York Times coming up with its wonderful solution to the troubles in Ireland. We have with us on the line Joe Lagan of Republican Sinn Féin. Joe, we'll let you get back and try to get some sleep or just to hunker down and keep the area safe. And we thank you for giving us that report.
No problem. Thanks. It's true.
We're going to now finish out the rest of this program by taking phone calls at 212-209-2900. If you want to speak to Pauline Campbell, she's with the Cavahy Road Residents Association. She's in studio. And I believe, Sandy, she has some relatives up there.
Yeah.
212-209-2900. If you want to speak to anyone and talk about what's going on in Ireland or whatever's on your mind.
Pauline, yes, when we were getting that report from North Belfast, you were saying off-air that you actually have relatives in the area.
Yeah, I have relatives that live there, and it's very terrifying because I can remember when I was listening to that report, I can remember as a child being in their house like years and years ago, and that's the same situation going on. And here we are with a Good Friday Agreement, and, I mean, these people are still suffering the same thing like 20 years later. You know, it's unbelievable. And I mean, and when that fellow was talking about them moving from interface to interface to interface, that's what they used to do with us in Port of Ryan. They used to move from interface to
interface.
What's
an interface?
An interface is a part of the road where actually one side is Catholic and there's like a road and the other side's Protestant. So, I mean, they would have done that. They'd done that at the start of the Drumcree protest. That would have been one way that they would have sort of done with the community, you know, and you didn't know. I mean, you could have went out of the community to Lurgan or whatever, but you didn't know. I mean, you would have had to ring the check and see where what road was open and if you could get back in. And the other thing I'd like to say to you is just when I was sitting here thinking, the Orange Order keeps saying about this whole thing that we're denying them their civil and religious liberties, you know, and that really pisses me off because we're not denying them their civil and religious liberties. We're saying, look, there's a route for you to get to your church. Go to your church, have your wee service, whatever, whatever, and if you're any sort of Christians at all, then go back the way that you come. And plus the fact that when they go back the way they come, they're on the edge of an interface. They're on the edge of those interfaces that I'm talking about on the way back, you know, and those Catholics are outside the Ring of Steel when the Ring of Steel goes up during the summer.
But Pauline, it seems to me that just hearing that report, for anyone who's taking part in that kind of what we can only really call ethnic cleansing,
yeah,
to talk about civil and religious liberty takes what we might say a bit of nerve.
Yeah, it does.
Pauline, just for our listeners out there, to give them a bit of an idea about Lurgan. Lurgan is in a crescent with two other towns, with Portadown, Lurgan,
yeah,
and Craigavon.
Craigavon's in between, yeah.
Yeah, and these towns were more or less built. Portadown is an old market town, I realize that, but
yeah,
these other towns were built more or less in a crescent, as nationalists have said to me over the years, to impede traffic in and out of Belfast, and more or less to keep the nationalists in a pocket,
yeah,
in Belfast and the whole thing like this. So people don't understand this. Like, at one time, they were giving away homes in Craigavon just to get loyalists to move in there, the whole thing, to fortify. This is like a buffer, a Maginot line, some sort of a defense thing against the nationalists in the north. I mean, this is the background that this is all played against. And now this plays into this whole thing about the loyalists and the Orangies.
Uh-huh.
They are suffering civil rights things. You were discussing when you were a kid that this was going on. I spoke to people like Jimmy Drum and people like this when they were kids. This was going on. This has never actually had a genesis. This has always, it seems to have been with us.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's sort of sad because Belfast was. I mean, in Belfast there was starting to be some sort of progress where people were coming together. But I can't see that happening in Portadown, because the other thing is Portadown is the bastion of Orangism. the Orange Order was founded out just out the road or whatever, you know, and they have made it into like Custer's last stand. I mean, if they lose this, they lose everything. And like they're being very naive. I mean, they need number one to recognise that there's a community there. They need number two to respect that community. They need to sit down and talk to us because it's the only way that it's going to be sorted out.
Yeah, and another time let's root for the Indians.
Yeah.
And you're listening to Radio Free Erin, and we will be taking phone calls from now to 5 to 3. The number here is 212-209-2900 if you want to join in the conversation. Remember, these are your airwaves, and this is your station, so call into it. 212-209-2900. You're calling into your station. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I wanted to thank Radio Free Erin for defending Robert Knight and defending Grandpa. I always spend my Saturdays listening to Al Lewis and then Radio Free Erin, and now half of that program block has been removed. I hope you guys will continue. I admire your courage and your ethics, and thank you very much.
Listen, man, I don't want callers calling up and saying about courage. We sit here in front of a mic and talk. It doesn't take any courage. The phone call that you heard from Belfast, running to these lines and stopping the Orangemen, that's courage.
Well, I agree, but
I thank you for what you're saying, but that is true courage. What we're doing is just speaking into a microphone.
God bless you all.
All right, thank you. 212-209-2900. WBAR, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say that you all make me proud to be Irish, and Robert Knight makes me proud to be a human on this planet Earth. I think that all of your voices, the voices of Radio Free Erin, are very, very important, and the voice of Robert Knight, and there's no opposition. The connection can be made between the struggle for Irish rights and the struggle for rights in the United States and worldwide. I listened to the tail end of your comments on, you know, what Robert Knight has done as director of the news department. But I don't know if you mentioned that when Rosemary Nelson was assassinated, he also did a very, very touching tribute and brought a lot of depth and history and humanity to it.
You know what it is? It's the thing with Robert. We just took it for granted. Robert. Of course Robert was going to cover that. You don't even question it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I took Wake Up Call for granted, too. And I took you guys for granted for the longest time because you don't think that it can be, you don't think that it can be taken away. But unfortunately, we're learning that these things can be taken away. And the fact that WBAI is being targeted right now is probably a sign of how much what you're saying is important to some people who don't want you to hear it.
Well, you can see the Wake Up Call crew tomorrow down at Pier 63, 23rd Street, all the way west, Hudson River, 2 to 9 p.m. Go down and see Bernard, Amy, Sharan Harper will be there, Janice K. Bryan and the gang.
Yeah, I hope to be there. Thank you. Bye.
The number here is 212-209-2900. We have a few more lines open. WBAI, these are your airwaves. Go ahead and speak.
Hello?
Oh, you're on the air. You're on your air.
All right. I have a comment about the loyalists always going on about how it's a religious issue. To me, it's about as much about religion as Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat was about bus schedules. That's just the pointy little hood they like to put over bigotry. At least they could admit they're bigots. That would be different.
Yeah. That's very true. I agree.
212, no further comment is needed, I guess, on that call. 212-209-2900, these are your airways, use them.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, tell you, Treese, he should leave, should resign. Bring all the banned and fired back. Thank you.
All right, as I said, these are your airways, you pay for them, this is your station. WBAI, these are your airways, use them.
Yeah, John, I was just wondering if you could comment on what the percentage of the so-called Orange Order and Loyalist death squads are actually made up by the British government operatives and paid for by the British taxpayers.
I'd say in order to have operatives, and speaking with some experience here with the FBI, you only need one or two in each area. to organize within, say, the Loyalist Death Squad. You'll see some of the trials that will be coming out on Brian Nelson, who was just one major MI5 agent that organized Loyalist Death Squad. There is a pack mentality, and they have a history of this.
Yeah, well, John, you know, like on a scale, everybody knows that an IQ of 185 is really something. But for the entire Orange Order, it's not that much. You would need more than one or two operatives in the Orange Order. You would need active people in there all the time, keeping these idiots going. And the thing I really like about it, as the last call-up brought up, was the more or less the reference to the Ku Klux Klan. This is a reference that these people don't deny. If anybody else in the world was ever said, oh, you like the Ku Klux Klan, they'd be screaming. You don't hear Paisley and the rest of the bigots turning around and saying, no, we're not the Ku Klux Klan. I think these people take great pride in the fact that they are like the Knights of the White Camellia,
well,
and the rest of these lunatics running around and
in the South. They're direct descendants down here.
Well, the other thing, I always find it interesting that on the Falls Road in the Nationalist area, there's a picture of Nelson Mandela, and the Loyalists instinctively identified with the Afrikaners. Each side knew which side they were on.
212-209-2900, these are your airwaves, use them. You're on the air at your station.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is Eric from Greenpoint. I listen to you guys. I've been listening to you for years, every weekend, and it's. I'm really glad you're still there. You're one of the few reasons to continue to listen to this station, unfortunately. So I want to thank you for playing that Sex Pistols tune, because that's a good example of actually something that you won't hear on even, you know, your hardest rock stations in New York. I'm glad to hear it, and it really... delivered a powerful punch. And I have a question. Please spell Gavahi Road for me so I can find out about it on the internet at length.
It's G-A-R-V-A-G-H Road. And we have a website, so I think it's www.gavahiroad.org.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Probably if you typed in Mayhem, Northern Ireland, it would probably come up on a search engine too, Gavahi Road.
It could.
These are your airwaves, WBAI. You're on the air.
Hello. This is Robert Knight.
Is this a tape recorder or is this the real deal?
I don't know if I've been banned from listening.
Hey, Robert, it's good to hear from you. And we want to say before you start talking... You know, we never did get to thank you for everything, and I hate making it sound like a radio obituary, but for all the good work you've done for Irish Republicans from 1978 on till today.
Well, it means I get to drink with everybody at my own wake and celebrate the return of all of us.
There's that sense of humor that we were speaking about at the top of the hour. Robert, maybe quickly you can explain to our audience what happened Wednesday night.
Well, I'd like to actually quote an Irish oldie, believe it or not, Moving Hearts. No time for love when they come in the morning. No time for love when they come for BAI. It's what happened the other night is I was abducted by a UFO. The moment that I walked in at 11:59, I was informed by a security staffer at the station that Earthwatch was canceled. I am no longer the host of Earthwatch. Earthwatch does not exist. I was informed in a memorandum handed to me by that staffer that I may not produce, host, co-host, substitute host, or even contribute to anything on the air, and that I am, quote, suspended, quote, without pay, and without any form of redress, without any interrogation, without one phone call, for at least the better part of a month. And this appears to be, to me, quite irregular in regard to union rules and other orders of law, but that's a matter that my attorneys will be dealing with. And in the meantime, I'm certainly... producing and working. I am a correspondent for Flashpoint at our sister station, KPFA, in California. I have been contributing news to a network that has more stations and affiliates than Pacifica does after its current shift in philosophy with the Free Speech Radio News, and I look forward to my return with Earthwatch on WBAI.
Robin, you had no clue of this the other night. As you approached this, the East River here in Wall Street, you didn't hear any humpback whales giving you a warning or anything like that? It was just news to you, huh?
Well, yes and no. Procedurally, no. But certainly, as you folks know, that's always a risk when one is engaged in the release of hazardous information. The last Earthwatch show was one in which I reported matters of public record, matters that in fact are required by law to be posted and published by Pacifica, although they are not. I reported the resignation of a board member. I reported the decision of an Alameda County judge that the current majoritarian component of the Pacifica board would not be allowed to pack itself with other members of this Mary Frances Berry derivative board that seems tinged with a corporate philosophy that acquiesced to a stampede by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, thereby weakening the independent funding base of Lou Hill's vision of Pacifica. I even engaged in an interview that was courteous and respectful with the resigned board member. Now, you say, did I know things would happen? Well, when I have done other reports, I have been intimidated by management, but I believe it's not worth saying something if you can't say something. And perhaps there may have been fears of additional releases of hazardous information, but what actually happened was, I think, disturbing and out of the character of the tradition of this radio station.
Robert, this is Sandy Boyer. Nice to talk to you again.
Hey, Sandy.
I was listening to David Rothenberg this morning, who said something very interesting to me. He speculated that the whole attack on WBAI and Pacifica was a result, as you mentioned, Mary Frances Berry, who of course serves on the United States Civil Rights Commission, that the centrist wing of the Democratic Party was anxious not to open up a debate on the left of the Democratic Party, to the left of the Democratic Party, anxious to stifle all that sort of debate in order to shift all political momentum back in the direction that they think right and proper. What's your view on that?
Well, Mary Frances Berry is a federal officer. She is someone who called in the Justice Department because she felt that people who loved the KPFA station and protested out there were not being treated severely enough by the police. This is a matter of record. A few days before the election, she appeared on a panel with the head of the Democratic Leadership Council and Bill Clinton. Certainly, there is a neoconservative Democratic Party impulse in the political behavior that she has exercised. She is a contributor of thousands of dollars to that party and to the Clinton campaign and to congressional campaigns of the Democrats. And certainly, the independent philosophy that many of us have exercised, the inquisitiveness about the difference between words and actual deeds may well have been disturbing. She does not often call me. We do not correspond, but I would presume that's the case.
All right, Robert, it seems to me that you've been a victim of radio profiling here at Route 120 Wall Street.
But that's Robert, what I love about you. You're zingers.
Listen, we're learning. We're sitting at the feet of the master. Robert, we're going to move on and take a few more phone calls, and we hope to see you tomorrow over at the Chelsea Piers. And also, if you want to show support for Robert Knight, on Monday between 5 and 7, Robert Knight supporters will be gathering here at 120 Wall Street. Robert, will you be speaking at that?
I will be speaking with great specificity because, as I've tried to tell people, everything I say I can prove, and I have exquisite documentation of many things, and I'll probably speak of them. But if I may, just for a moment before I go, I wanted to give praise to you and the entire crew of Radio Free Iron, because you have educated me. And, you know, to some people, it may seem unorthodox for a brother to be slighting an Irish oldie. But, you know, if you know the names of Martin and Malcolm, Mandela, Hampton, Addox, not Maddox, Crispus Addox, Abner Louima, then why in the world shouldn't I know the names of Ray McCreesh and Bobby Sands and Patsy O'Hara and Kevin Lynch and Kieran Doherty? Because both the efforts for freedom of the Irish community and those of the African community in America are the same. They're remnants of a British white supremacist settler colony. South Africa, the North, six counties, here in the United States. And many of the pejoratives that people make so much of today were first practiced on the Irish. And I guess I just want to say that I'm not carrying water for the Queen. And I'm not carrying any other accoutrements for the Queen. They say that Britannia rules the waves. But I'll leave you with this. I think it's time for the Queen to waive the rules.
You're listening to Radio Free Erin, and that was Robert Knight, who has been indefinitely suspended in animation. Number here is 212-209-2900. We have a few lines open. These are your airwaves. Use them. WBAI, your station.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you. That was very moving. I was so touched to hear him. Obviously, the man is so upset. I wanted to give out the telephone number of the Concerned Friends of BAI. It's 1-800-825-0055. And they're having a meeting, a general meeting, on August 2nd. If anybody would like to attend, they should call that number. I can't understand how you treat Lee to walk around that station. I was curious, what's her demure? What, you know, what is this woman? She sounds like just an incredible monster. Are you in contact with her?
No, we're here on Saturdays, and actually it's virtually abandoned up here. The only thing we got to look at is monitors of empty halls that we can see nobody going through. No, but thanks for the phone call. 212-209-2900. We don't want to start name calling here. These are your airwaves. Use them. WBAI, it's your station.
Hi, guys. It's an honor to follow Robert Knight. This is Randy from Woodstock. And I want to echo what the previous caller said about how listening to Grandpa and then into you guys was a major part of my Saturday. And I always look forward to it. And now there's only this half left, which is certainly substantial. But, Grandpa is missed. And I've tried to maintain as much objectivity as I can in all of these things that have happened at the station. But on a personal note, back in 1987, I and a group of friends were involved in something that ended up making quite a bit of news, and it was a matter of government repression. And one of the first people to contact us to get on the air and tell our story was Robert Knight. And people who are that way to me and so many other people in the New York movement that Robert has covered exquisitely and helped us tell our stories of, just I can't maintain any objectivity anymore. And I must say that for this final atrocity on the air, at least I hope it's final, Utrice must go, and the bannings and the firings must end, and I'll let other people talk.
Okay, thank you. You're listening to Radio Free Erin. We have about 10 more minutes for phone calls. The number here is 212-209-2900. Remember, these are your airwaves. You paid for them. Let's use them. BAI, it's your station. You're on the air.
Hey, Radio Free Erin. It's great to be online. I wanted to say a couple of things about the PNB's switch to a new set of lawyers, which I think has a little bit of interesting information, and I'd like anybody out there to confirm it, that one of the lawyers' groups was representing Ollie North in the Iran-Contra scandal. And given Robert Knight's dedication and great reporting during that period. You know, I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist. There's enough open bullshit going on that no conspiracy is really necessary. But I think that connection is very interesting, and we need to be very, very careful these days because that's some very big money behind that organization.
All right, thank you. No matter what law firm is picked, it's going to cost a lot of money what's going on here. WBAI, these are your airwaves. Use them. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you, John, very much. It's a pleasure always listening to this radio station. I have a train in the background. It's always a pleasure listening to this station. It's like the foggy dew for me. There's a few men left that are very concerned about Ireland. My question is to, and I'd like a good response from Pauline there, how would Pauline feel if Irish troops were next to British troops in the Gavahi Road and in all the hot spots there? And if you need any kind of equipment, ask Rupert. He's got cheap prices going these days. That bastard. But also, you have Bertie Ahern, who's been going around running after Tony Blair, who's a very good speaker. And he's got all the snake oil. He's got Bush behind him now. And they got this situation. There's Irish troops all over the world. Now, Bertie, bad on him, because he just took a good opportunity with that 96 or 98. The deal was cut. Jerry Adams, the whole bunch, they have sold these people down the drain. And shame on the South. Again, I say that. Shame on the South. For they stand there. For every British soldier that stands there, and RUC that stands there, there should be an Irish soldier. Do they want a solution to that problem? But the Irish soldier's there. Then go to martial law and crush this once for all. Bertie Ahern has made Michael Collins look like a silly boy. He has written away all the rights. The North is going to have to stand by its own.
All right.
There's only a few people like Rory O'Brady and your station that is
okay.
On the voice.
All right, thanks. Thanks,
thank you very much.
Pauline wants to respond. Go ahead, Pauline.
You're saying about the Irish soldiers. From all the Irish soldiers are all out in other countries. They're not at home. They're all out overseas.
Yeah, and what Irish soldiers are they talking about? are they talking about the guy that couldn't beat the Tinkers at a puck fair?
Yeah, that's I was trying to figure out which Irish soldiers he was talking about himself. And was going through the conversation.
Yes, I think some of your friends in South Armagh might come up. All right, 212-209-2900, WBAI, these are your airwaves. Use them. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I was much impressed, as I'm sure everyone was, about your passionate statement concerning Robert Knight, and as I was about David Brottenberg this morning, and many other brave statements. Now the thing to do is to walk out. An injury to one is an injury to all. Strike. This is what you have to do now. Don't be picked off one by one. This is what's been happening. You've got to show them that you have the decision in your hands. Strike.
You're listening to WBAI, and there's a lot of strategies out there, and everyone seems to be deploying their own type of strategy, I have to admit. But 212-209-2900, we appreciate everyone calling in and speaking. Yeah, Barney?
I'd just like to say something more about Robin Knight and his more or less relationship with us and our relationship with him. This is what pretends to be a show today, Radio Free Aaron. It came out the way through another black man, Amiri Baraka, Leroy Jones. He was the first man to give us airtime up here on this station many, many years ago. This was before the hunger strikes, it was around the time of the blanket protest, the dirty protest in Marrakesh. When Irish political prisoners were no longer Irish political prisoners, they were common criminals. It was Amiri Baraka who had us on the air here many, many times. And from that, we were given the what turned out to be this radio show today. And Robert Knight was a man who, to the general listening public of WBAI and Pacifica, brought the north of Ireland in living color. He was the man who, during the day, we are up here toiling on these airways one day a week. Robert Knight, when anything was happening of any consequence in Ireland, Robin Knight was giving it to you.
And believe you me, Robert Knight has enough on his plate with what's going on in the African-American community, to be devoting time to the Irish-American community is just wonderful.
He put the thing on the Country Gate, which was one of the greatest radio, show, series, whatever it was, that ever presented on any network.
And the number here at WBAI is 212-209-2900. Remember, these are your airwaves. You paid for them. This is your station. Call in WBAI. You're on the air.
This is Dennis Bernstein talking about Conjugate and Undercurrents. I was the founder of that program with Robert Knight. We broke many aspects of the Iran-Contra scandal. In fact, it was through that program that Robert went down to Panama and risked his life and won the George Polk Award reporting on the U.S. Deadly invasion of Panama. And let me break some news for you all now before I tell you what I'm thinking in terms of the axing, the banning of one of the great Pacifica reporters. As we speak, there is an attempted coup going on in Haiti. There is firing in the streets. There's a battle for Aristide to stay in power. This is the kind of reporting that we should be dealing with, but yet we have to fight, looking over our own shoulders, trying to hold on to these marvelous, scrappy, alternative airwaves against what I consider an ongoing corporate raid. And in this context, the idea that Utrice Lead and the management there, backed up by Bessie Wash in Washington, would axe this great reporter, particularly on his way back from Tulia, Texas, where he was to be reporting on one of the important civil rights issues of our time, racial profiling, the entire town being profiled, to find out that he walks into a radio station at 11:59 and cannot go on the air and do his work. And instead he's confronted by somebody who is one of the people, I guess, watching through these expensive Orwellian surveillance cameras is just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous.
Dennis, before you go any further, I want to thank you and what the people in Berkeley have done for the people in New York. I only wish we could have done for you in 1999 what you guys are doing for us right now out there in Berkeley. And I just, you probably don't hear that much from the guys out here in New York, but many thanks for what you're doing on Flashpoint, and that can be heard through the internet. How did you hear about us, Dennis?
Well, I'm getting you in through Real Player on the internet, a friend of mine. I'm not a technical genius, so somebody came over, flipped some switches, did some connects, and I just happened to be listening in. And I really wanted to join the chorus of support against these people who don't know much about radio, but apparently are becoming experts in intimidation and bullying and people. Now that you mention 1999, what's happening to you all there now is a version of what happened to us, where our bosses at Pacifica spend tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars to try and silence this network that was founded by people who went to jail to offer an alternative, to take on the corporate war machine. And now we have them using surveillance cameras. In our case, they hired a private security firm that had connections. Some of the agents who were in our station had former backgrounds in the FBI and the CIA. So when we'd come into our station, they'd be filming us. They'd have full access to our Rolodexes, to our offices. When I was arrested for telling the truth about the potential sale of WBAI or KPFA, when I was arrested, I had in my office information from a whistleblower who was talking about some very important connections between the government and drug dealers. And that whistleblower was terrified when we were locked out and our station was chained down and boarded up, because he was worried that he would be in big trouble and that his life was in danger. That's what these bosses, these insensitive bullies, these intimidators, these people who do not understand what this scrappy alternative media is all about are doing. They should be ashamed of themselves. The people who are listening to your show now should understand how fragile this situation is, how close they are to losing their alternative network, which is the only one left. This is what I consider this a mop-up operation. The corporate media, the corporations have seized control of just about all media. National Public Radio is really National Corporate Radio now. We are the one remaining network, and they are trying to kill us, sell us out, shut us down, undermine us, and it shouldn't happen. The people should not let this happen. We must unite. We must fight this one together. We must fight back. And here is an open offer to Bessie Wash, the executive director, now busy hiring corporate law firms like Williams and Connolly and Jaworski and Utrecht Lead. Here's my phone number, 510-848-6767, extension 260. You have an open invitation to come on to Flashpoints and argue your perspective. You guys, they never call me back. They're not interested. They're not interested in telling the truth. I had one conversation after this horrific shutdown with Utrecht Lead. She told me to call her back. I've been calling her back ever since, and I can't get a hold of her. Maybe she's listening. Maybe she wants to call me.
Dennis,
come on the air with Bessie Wash and argue her perspective.
Well, Dennis, we can only hope she's not listening. We want to take a few more phone calls before we go off the air, Dennis. But thanks for listening to us on the computer, and thanks for calling in, and thanks for the great work out in California.
Thanks for doing the show.
No problem. We only have time to take maybe two more phone calls, because then we go out to the prison shout-out that will be going on right after our show and before Gut Bucket Matinee. Turn down your radio. These are your airwaves. Use them.
Yeah, right. Hey, thank you very much, Radio Free Aaron. You guys are, like one guy said earlier, you make me proud to be Irish. And
Where are you calling from?
I'm just closing all my windows now. I'm actually in the car driving south on the Jersey Turnpike, and I got all the windows shut, and now I can say something without all the interference. Anyway, it sounds like there might be job opportunities down at WBAI for broadcasters. I'd like to come in, man. Maybe they'll let me on the air.
Not if you keep talking like you do, and to us, your time will be limited. But listen, we're going to get going, because I hear it coming back on your car radio. We take maybe one or two more phone calls. BAI, these are your airwaves. Use them. When you open up the phone lines here, you never know who will get the call, and that was a full orchestra calling in, probably from Brooklyn.
Haiti.
Yes.
I've been crying out for freedom of speech. I walked
Monroe,
with you,
Monroe.
The Irish.
No, just one second. We got 1 minute left, and I think it is fitting that we go out with you, probably one
Thank
of the longest-term listeners.
I've been fighting for the good WBAI, the ideal WBAI, and the trouble is that we're even afraid to tell the truth about things that we know, like Robert Knight mentioned about Clayton Riley's violent aspect, and yet it's not brought up.
I don't even want to get into that, but what do you have to say? We have to get over the show.
We have to have a change, back to the old, and an improvement. An improvement is a change. I mean, there's good people working together, for God's sakes.
Monroe,
is it possible?
Are we going to see you tomorrow? We're in Chelsea.
Of course. I mean, but I'm afraid, you know, listen, I'm the kind of guy who gives out his piece of paper, and people tell me, don't give it out. If this is not right. I mean, at least let me give it out and read it, and if you disagree, we'll talk about it. You see what I mean?
Monroe, I think it was fitting to go out with you. Probably the one of the longest, if not the most persistent caller here at WBAI. If you tuned in, you might even think that Monroe has a show here as many times as you get on all the other programmers. We're Radio Free Aaron every Saturday, 1:30 to 3 o'clock. We're going to go to the shout-out line, and this is concerned family members sending out wishes to people that are in prison at Rikers Island, upstate in Ossining, over in New Jersey at Rahway, where the drug war continues, and these are prisoners of war to the drug war that's being waged here in America. And loved ones sending out their best wishes in this hot summer here in New York City. So from all the best here at WBAI. This is John McDonough.
And just before we go, John, I'd like to thank Timmy Miles, the members of the AOH, who called me on that challenge I more or less threw out 2 weeks ago about a monument on the west side of Manhattan here for the 50 people who were killed in 1871 during the Orange Riots here in New York. I'm waiting to hear from Ed Lynch, other people from the west side and all that, but things will be done, and we're going to get the ball rolling. So thank you, Timmy Miles, and everybody else who called. This is Brian Moore and
Sandy Boyer, thanking our engineer, Eliza Butler, as always.
See you at the pier tomorrow, 2 o'clock.
Everybody dry. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours right here on Earth. And now we see the light.